Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We are saying goodbye today to a man who has been a big part of who we are here. Reporter Bob Duffy is leaving St. Louis Public Radio. He helped found the online newspaper, the St. Louis Beacon, which later merged with St. Louis Public Radio. He came along for the ride and has had numerous bylines covering arts and culture for us since. Bob has been a journalistic iron man in St. Louis for more decades than he might care to mention. He did everything but sweep the floors during his 30-plus years at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, including stints there as a reporter, columnist, critic, and editor. And Bob Duffy joins me in studio.
Hello, Don.
Great to see you.
Thank you. It's good to see you, too.
I'm guessing that you're spending some time at this point of your life looking back.
I am.
Most of us do. When you do look back, Bob, on your professional career, what comes into sharpest focus?
Well, Don, I've thought about this a lot. There are two things that I want to tell you about. First, I have either recruited or have had friends who have recommended young men and women to come and work with us as interns, both at the Beacon, mostly at the Beacon. I don't think I've been able to pull it off here, but I just want to run through the names. There was Joy Resmovitz, who is now the education editor for Huffington Post. There's Nick Fandos, who was editor of the Harvard Crimson and since then has been working for the New York Times. There's Isabel Stillman, who was a protege of mine thanks to her grandfather, Jack Danforth, who told me to take her in hand and teach her to write, which I was happy to do. She did some wonderful reporting from Nepal. There's Andrea Rubin, who's now at NPR. And there are others who have worked with us and have been true to what I think are the principles of journalism, which is content, 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 and worry about the sort of the particulars after that. So I feel like if I have a legacy, it is embodied in those men and women. They're all, first of all, they're all great and funny, and then just in the next room is Kelly Moffitt, who I've worked with on stories here, and she's fantastic, and she's a terrific writer and fun to go on adventures with. So that's a big legacy thing. The other is the incidental things that happen to you. There was a guy named Danny Cole who was a left winger, an activist, taught at Washington U, and rabble rouser, and I adored him. And he died recently. He, for years, had been trying to help a woman named Patty Pruitt get out of the slammer. Patty killed her abusive husband and was convicted of murder, and has languished in jail all these years. And Danny saw, as many people have believed, that there's no justification for keeping this woman in jail. But I wrote Danny's obit, and after
tough
after that obit a couple of days ago, I got this letter from a prison, and I didn't know what it could possibly be, but it was from Patty, and it was on a piece of yellow legal paper written in scrupulously careful Palmer method cursive. And I can excuse me, I can barely talk about it because it touched my heart. So that's my legacy. I mean, I God knows how many stories I've written, and if anybody remembers them, it's fine. But
I'm tempted to ask you about the kinds of adventures you're talking about with Kelly Moffitt.
Oh, but Kelly Moffitt.
I'll save that for another day and
great,
for off the radio.
It's a great story. She and I had heard that I told her about this ceiling down at the U-Haul store Kings Highway. Yeah. And she said, oh, let's go. And so we put it off for a while, and then we finally went. And Kelly said to the guy behind the counter, oh, Mr. Man, could we possibly see your ceiling? And he said, sure. And next thing you know, they're uncovering it. So that was – It wasn't like we did, you know, went to a fire or something. She's an intellectual adventure taker. So I'm devoted to her.
Well, for those who don't know, she's one of the producers of this program.
Yes, indeed.
And one of the reasons that it works so well.
Yes, right.
Well, I mean that. It's great to have her. The young people today, I'm continually impressed by them. I mean, they're smart. They're energetic, committed. Are they different today, do you think, than they were back when you were starting at the Post in the 70s?
I don't think so. I think that the ink and the paper and the broadcast attract a special breed, and they're all, you know, nosy and smart, and they want to do a good job. And they, you know, my generation, we were all hot to be Bernstein and Woodward and to, you know, bring down the government. But it's a special trait that you like to be a part of movement forward with the society. And there are always going to be clinkers and people who get into it for reasons of self-aggrandizement. But most of the people I know do it because they love to write, care about the language, and care about the society they're in. So,
you know, you mentioned Woodward and Bernstein, and it's been my observation, and it's just mine, is that they brought some people into this business for the wrong reasons, because they wanted to see themselves on the screen as Robert Redford or Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah. But, other people came in for serious reasons, too. It was an inspiring story, no matter what.
Yeah. You say your watchwords, your bywords are content, content, content.
Right.
And looking particularly at newspapers today, what are you seeing in that regard with what's going on in the newspaper?
All depends on the newspaper. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you saw it a couple of weeks ago. There's all this huffing and puffing about writing too long and writing with rich language and adjectives. I don't know if you saw that long take out the Times did on the woman with Alzheimer's and her husband. It was like almost book length, and it was just beautiful. And that's what I mean. That's what I mean by content. I get this stuff about that sentence is all backwards, and you got to change that around. Well, I've been doing this for a while, and I don't want to change it around. Mm-hmm. So I see that some, but content is, after all, why I do this, and I think that most of the people do it. You don't go into a business, the business of journalism, which is as far as I'm concerned, is a branch of the humanities. And you don't go into it to learn how to diagram sentences and figure out what's a gerund and what isn't. Mm-hmm. You go into it because you want to tell stories, and you want to tell stories that have meaning to people, as that huge story did. But you can do that. Also happens in 12 inches, or what we used to call 12 inch stories. You know, in the newspaper business, in short news features or short features. But it is in a way it's a personal vision, because you have a way that you want to tell the story. But it's also it's more of a more subjective, more emotional sometimes.
It seems to me, Bob, that our attention spans, though. You talk about content and length and using the space that you need to tell a story. But our attention spans don't seem to be what they once were.
I know. I'm reluctant to just capitulate to that, though. Hmm. I'll bet millions of people read that story, because it has to do with the lives of millions of people. Hmm. And so I don't pretend that I could write something that long, but it sure was. It was meant for me. People like who, you know, either have a parent who suffered from the disease, or forget their keys all the time and wonder if I'm suffering from that disease. So it has enormous weight. Same thing. I don't know if you saw that thing about skiing a couple of years ago. The Times did that was so beautiful. It was a mixed media thing, online and in the paper. It was just grand.
I think it's one of the things that not to blow our own horn, although it certainly sounds like what I'm doing. One of the things that sets NPR and St. Louis Public Radio apart is the ability to spend more time and go into more detail than is certainly commonplace in the broadcast world today.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're satisfied with that?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, right. What about the influence of social media?
Well, I just think it's great. I mean, I have been – it's probably totally narcissistic, but when I write something I like, I push it out on the social media. And I think that with, operations like ours that have serious budgetary problems, you can't afford to buy advertising. You can't afford to buy billboards. You can't afford skywriting. So you push it out on social media. You tweet it. You get attention any way you can. You go out on, our folks go out and work art fairs and stuff and talk about us. It's just friendly. And
one of the turns in the road for you was getting together and collaborating with Margie Freivogel on establishing the St. Louis Beacon.
And Richard Boyle. Yeah.
And ultimately the association with St. Louis Public Radio. Tell me something about that process and the vision as you guys were talking about it at the time.
Well, there's sort of two parts of that. When we found out that the company was going to be sold, John Sawyer John Sawyer and the Freivogels and I tried to buy it. And we actually raised, at least on paper, a whole lot of money, but it didn't work out. So that went to another company, and then so there we were in 2006, with time on our hands. And so Margaret and Bill Freivogel and I went out to the Olympia on McCausland, and we said. Margaret had heard from Martha Shirk, Bill Wu's widow, and Shirk said,
former editor of the Post.
Yeah, Bill, former editor of the Post. She told us about an outfit called the Voice of San Diego. And so Marty, my husband, and I were going out there, and so we went down to San Diego. We saw the operation, which was in a room about this big, and it was just guys that really wanted to do news. And they did it, and I did sort of a white paper on it and brought it back, and we talked about it. Which they said there's no reason that four smart people like we can't get this thing together. So off we went, and it was during that time the formative part of what was originally called the Platform, and then it was changed to the Beacon. It was then that they discovered, the other two or three discovered, that I could raise money. So that's why I ended up walking around town with a tin cup, and raising money for the Beacon. I did okay. And then that's what I did when I was first over here as well.
Sure, so. That was a pretty big tin cup. I think most people in this part of the business. And we've only got a minute left. But what about the association then with St. Louis Public Radio?
Well, in 2013, we decided we'd talked for a long time, but we pulled this merger together, and my role in that was it was substantial, I guess, because I got there was resistance in Columbia, Missouri at that point, and we got a bunch of local heavy hitters to sign a letter to Mr. Wolf that said St. Louis needs this because St. Louis needs good news. I mean, good, well-reported news. And off we went.
Is this where the news business is going? Again, a very brief time frame here.
I would guess so. I mean, who can afford trucks and ink and paper and buildings? And, it's got to be this or some variation on this. This is pretty good.
This is
pretty versatile.
Absolutely. When you bring broadcasting and the internet and the website and all of it together, it's a
you
pretty
bet.
Potent formula, isn't it?
As I scramble out the door, I just want to thank you for being such a good colleague. It's just been wonderful. You helped me out with a scoop. Remember?
No.
Recently, that the governor's dad.
Oh, said, right. Okay. Bob, I have to say goodbye to you here now. Our paths will be crossing. We certainly wish you well.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.